Lately, you know, every morning you turn on Morning Edition and NPR and you hear about trade and the conversation with China. And it wasn't too long ago that every conversation was about trade and the EU as we look at tariffs and the Trump administration sort of recalibrating the scales for the trade conversation. What message are you bringing to South Dakota today in your arrival? Is trade part of that conversation?
Well, very much so. I think that the transatlantic trade and investment relationship is the single most important relationship in the world. The European Union is the most important partner of the United States. We're the largest export destination for 44 out of your 50 states, and 80% of foreign direct investment in the United States comes from the European Union. And equally, we value greatly United States investment in Europe. So this is a hugely important trade and investment relationship, which we look forward to deepening in the future.
I'm wondering how much the news about China is changing the dialogue. It certainly has sort of shifted the headlines to we're all sort of talking about a possible trade war with China. Is that, take some of the pressure off so some of that diplomacy can happen behind the scenes, or does it sort of increase, the heat in the kitchen?
Well, we're still in discussions with the administration about making permanent the temporary exemption to the steel and aluminum tariffs, which were announced a few weeks ago, and that's an ongoing discussion. But we actually share quite a lot of this administration's concerns about Chinese practices, whether this is overcapacity in the steel and aluminum sector, whether this is compulsory acquisition of IP, intellectual property, or technology, the excessive involvement of state-owned enterprises in the Chinese economy. So we're very much on the same page with the administration, and indeed we will join some of their consultations with China in the context of the WTO, because we do share those concerns.
And where are we at with those exemptions for steel and aluminum? Those are where exactly are we at in that process?
Well, they have been agreed until the 1st of May, and we are in discussions with the administration about how, in our view, to make them permanent, because we don't believe that European steel and aluminum exports to the United States are creating any problems or disruption for U.S. industry. Quite the contrary, in many cases, they're providing high-quality products that would not be available from other sources. So we don't believe that we are part of the problem, and therefore we look forward to being the subject of a permanent exemption.
Much has been made, Ambassador, about this notion of a trade war. Is that hyperbole? Are we exaggerating when we say trade war? Is this a trade dialogue? Is it just semantics? How do we classify and categorize the kinds of conversations and rhetoric that we're seeing now regarding international trade?
Well, I think certainly in European terms, it's more skirmish than I would say we've had conflicts in the past. This is not even the first time we've had discussions over steel. Going back in 2001, 2002, we had a similar conversation. So given the volume of trade there is between the EU and the United States, it's not surprising that there are occasional disagreements or conflicts. So I think you have to put all this in the context of what I described earlier, which is the enormity of this economic relationship and the depth and breadth of it. In terms of with China, I mean, we do strongly believe that the best way to address these issues is within the context of the rules of the World Trade Organization. We are not fans of unilateral action, because we believe that unilateral action taken by one party can lead to unilateral action taken by another, and that can end up with a tit for tat in which, at the end of the day, everybody loses. So we certainly believe in taking a strong position on a number of China's unfair practices, and the fact that European and American companies do not have the same access to the Chinese market or have access on the same terms to the Chinese market as Chinese investors and exporters do to our markets. But we want to deal with this within the rules of the international trading system, so that system is preserved and protected, because it has been the basis of our prosperity of the last 20 or 30 years.
When you come to a state such as South Dakota, what's your message for farmers and producers and agricultural workers when it comes to trade with the EU?
Well, I mean, we are big importers of soy and corn and other products from the United States, and we would hope to continue to do so. We're South Dakota is not one of the 44 states for whom we are the largest exporter. I think we're the third, your third largest exporter here. But I'm sure there is scope for growing that trade and between us, and also in other areas, whether it's in the area of the financial services or in the healthcare area, where there are already important connections between South Dakota and Europe. I think there is scope for growing and developing that economic relationship.
Can you elaborate on that, on those healthcare connections between South Dakota and Europe, and ways that might expand?
Well, there are companies here, Sanford in particular, which hosted an event I did at the chamber this morning, who are engaged in with companies and healthcare providers in Europe. And these are areas, I'm simply illustrating that it's not just the area of agriculture, but I think also in other areas there is scope for greater economic activity between South Dakota and the European Union.
Ambassador O'Sullivan, many of us followed the news about Brexit, and with the Trump administration, some of the rhetoric has changed. What are some of the political impacts of those events that you see, and how is that political rhetoric sort of impacting diplomacy as we know it?
Well, I think We deeply regret the decision of the British people to leave the European Union, but we respect their democratic choice, and we're in the process of working through how that's going to happen and what will be the new relationship between a United Kingdom outside of the EU and the remainder of the 27 countries who continue within the Union. It's incredibly complicated, Laurie, to be very frank. I don't think people who voted to leave in the UK perhaps fully comprehended the scale of the disruption this would mean for the British economy. Clearly, there is a lively debate going on in the United Kingdom about exactly what kind of Brexit they want, how many links they want to sever and how many links they want to maintain. We've agreed a transition period of nearly 2 years from the moment that they will leave at the end of March next year, during which very little will change. So I think there we have achieved a certain degree of certainty for business for a limited period, but building a new relationship between the United Kingdom and the EU 27 is going to take many, many years. And this is a task to which we are committed, but I think there's no point in hiding. It will be disruptive.
Mm. You're speaking today on a webcast with Dr. Joseph Bottom at Dakota State University about digital issues that divide and unite the EU and the U.S. Give us a preview of what some of those topics might be on that webcast, if you will.
Well, I think that, you know, the digital economy is hugely important for us all. I think we're all beginning to realize, I used to get reprehended by some of my digitally literate friends when I would talk about the digital economy versus the bricks and mortar economy. I think what is happening is a convergence where even the traditional industry as we know it, manufacturing or retailing, is also being digitized. And this is a huge revolution for all of us. It raises huge issues of security, cybersecurity, and Dakota State University is a leader in thinking about those issues and training the next generation of people who will have to need to protect our critical infrastructure, to protect our banks and our financial transactions from cyber attacks. And of course, we have the issue of privacy. The European Union on the 25th of May this year will put into effect probably the single most comprehensive piece of data privacy legislation which exists anywhere in the world, and we believe this will be a market leader in the kind of guarantees that citizens need to be given about how their data is protected in this new digital world.
What are some of the hallmarks of that that legislation that Americans should maybe sit up and listen to?
Well, I think the key to it is the ownership of the data by the citizen. So citizens will be able to ask companies what data is held about them. They'll be able to withdraw that data if they wish. And if they want to transfer their data to another provider of the same services, they will be able to do that. They will also be able to understand what are the full uses which are being made of their data. The legislation makes clear that the consent of citizens to the use of their data by platforms or whatever digital company they're interfacing with has to be an explicit consent. And I think it's interesting to note that Facebook, in the light of the latest Cambridge Analytica discoveries, is now proposing to make available to all its users the EU privacy guarantees which will result from this new legislation.
Fascinating stuff. David O'Sullivan is the European Union Ambassador to the United States. He's at Dakota State University today. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.